On that note, we are joined right now by an NBA writer at Sports Illustrated, a SiriusXM NBA analyst, co-host of the crossover NBA show with Chris Mannix and Howard Beck. He is the pride of UC Davis. He is a friend of the program. He is Howard Beck. Howard, what's going on? How are you?
Doing well, Romy. How are you? Thank you for the very nice intro, the UC Davis part, of course, being the most important part.
Dude, that is a very important part. Hold on a minute. That's really important because I, as you know, also a member of the great UC family, so I'm proud of you and I'm proud of that relationship. Good to have you back. Listen, it's been a couple of months since you and I last spoke, so how is life and how is the new gig with SI?
Appreciate it. The new gig is still very fresh, just started last Wednesday, but the NBA season is upon us, so there's no time to get acclimated. We're just jumping right in, but thrilled to be with Sports Illustrated. That was the dream job since I was a teenager. First became a sports fan and first got, you know, engrossed in sports writing and thought that might be something I'd like to do. So this is the dream gig. So I'm thrilled to be with SI and happy to get going.
Good for you. Good to see it. Howard Beck is joining us. You've actually had a couple of dream gigs, which I'll get to in a minute. But Howard, in terms of the season, I mean, it's starting and we're entering the worst part of the pandemic that we've seen to date. I mean, there was no way the league was going to go with a full bubble again. So what do you make of the approach that the league is taking?
Yeah, listen, I mean, all the excitement and all the usual, you know, all the discussions we have, Jim, and all the stuff of, you know, who can win the championship, who's going to be MVP, like all the excitement and the thrill of having the NBA back, I think needs to be tempered. And it's hard because we, like with everybody else across the country and around the world, we all just kind of want to feel like things are normal again. And the NBA being back is part of that. And it's natural to be excited about it. But I do think this is not the summer. This is not the bubble. The NBA did a great job of securing themselves in the bubble, but that was the easy part when it comes right down to it. Because if you don't let anybody else in and nobody leaves, you can keep the virus out and everybody can then applaud how great a job you did. And that's not to diminish it. It was difficult and it was a definite burden for everybody who was part of it. But what they're doing now with no bubble means a lot more risk. And I just think it's inevitable that guys are going to get the virus. Like, how would they not? Everybody's in their home markets. They're in their homes. They have wives and kids, girlfriends, family members. They're going through their daily routine, and you're going to get exposed just as anybody else in their daily routine gets exposed. And so the key thing for the NBA, you know, they can't assume that COVID won't affect them at all. They have to manage it as best they can, catch cases as quickly as possible so that you don't have outbreaks among teams, and hope for the best. But, you know, this is a big business, and there's billions of dollars at stake. And so, of course, they're going to soldier on and just try to do the best they can. I think the NBA will do a great job with it, but they can do the best possible job, and there will still be cases because that's how prevalent the virus is.
No doubt. You're exactly right. Howard Beck is joining us. All right, so I could follow you on that point, but our time is limited, so I want to keep moving. Before the start of the season, Howard, we had the Giannis contract and the James Harden saga. First of all, what was your reaction to the Giannis deal? Not only that he decided to stay in Milwaukee, but he signed a contract which is going to keep him as long as he possibly, or keep him there as long as he possibly could have stayed. What is your reaction to that?
I mean, I love it for the Milwaukee Bucks, and I know that, look, just because Giannis did it doesn't mean that all small markets are now magically graced with the same benefit. You got to do things right. And it's a higher bar sometimes in a smaller market than it would be for teams in glamour markets. But I do think it's a good sign. I think stability in the small markets is good for the league. And the Bucks earned this. And I think the most important conclusion anybody should draw from Giannis's signature is not, oh, he'll be fabulously wealthy. He was already fabulously wealthy, and if he didn't sign it, he could have signed something next summer that would have made him more fabulously wealthy. What that signature really meant was he believes in Bucks ownership and in the Bucks front office, and that the trajectory they're on is one where he can compete, contend for titles year in, year out for the foreseeable future. Because if he didn't believe that, and that's really how he's built, he wants that more than anything, then he could have left all of his options open next summer. And he decided to close off all of his options. No Miami Heat, no Toronto, no anybody else. I'm here because I believe in what this franchise is doing, That's a tremendous vote of confidence in the Bucks franchise.
We were talking to Howard Beck. So, Howard, what about James Harden then? Like, how does Giannis signing in Milwaukee affect the market for Harden? Or, because Harden has made it so clear that he does not want to be in Houston, is that going to really hurt the market for him? What's that look like?
Well, the market for James Harden, you know, you'd think it would be a lot frothier given he's a recent MVP, a perennial MVP candidate. Yeah, he's 31, but he's still playing at an incredibly high level, and his style of game should age pretty well. There should be, you would think, a ton of interest. But James Harden plays a certain way, and it is very ball dominant, and it is all-consuming. And if you're going to make a trade for him, you have to basically adapt your entire team to him and decide that you know, just as he was the entire engine with the Rockets, he's going to be with you. So I don't see teams knocking down the Rockets' door to get him or making offers that blow them away. But if you're the Rockets, you need an offer that blows you away because you're talking about one of the greatest scorers of all time and still a top five player in today's game. So it's tough. It's tough to find the right package. And until they do, the Rockets should be in no hurry to move him. They've got to wait and make sure that they make the best deal for themselves, because once Harden's gone, it could be a very, very long time, Jim, before the Rockets have any player of that caliber again.
We're talking NBA with Howard Beck. All right, Howard, the Nets are opening up the season at home against Golden State. You've called your shot. You said that you expect Kevin Durant to be the MVP this year. What do you expect from the Nets overall as a team in their first year with Durant and Kyrie and Steve Nash as their head coach?
So there's a lot of caveats on this team, Jim, and I'm the first to note them, right? We haven't seen Durant play in a regular season game, preseason notwithstanding. He hasn't played in a real game in 18 months. He's coming back from one of the toughest injuries there is, the Achilles surgery. Most guys who come back from the Achilles are not back to their old level. He and Kyrie have never been teammates before. They may be friends, but they've never been teammates in the NBA before. Steve Nash is a rookie coach. Caris LeVert and Spencer Dinwiddie have to adapt to new, lesser roles alongside the two stars. Like, that's a lot of stuff. Those are a lot of things. You know, chemistry and just the mechanics of working out this team, that's all new to each other. So, expectations should be very high because of the talent level. And, yeah, they're a contender in the East, for sure. They have a shot to make the finals, absolutely, if everything goes right. But that is a lot of caveats. And if it all goes their way, man, it could be an incredible season. But probably there'll be some snags. There'll probably be some bumps along the way. They're going to need to get used to each other, figure out chemistry, roles, all that stuff. But Durant so far, at least in the preseason games, looked very much like himself, and that is a fantastic sign. And if he plays up to his old level and the Nets are as good as we think they can be, then yeah, I think he's right in the mix for MVP.
We are talking to Howard Beck for a few more moments. Howard, what about the defending champs, the Lakers? What kind of LeBron James, Howard, are we expecting to see this season? And how do you think they will use him in terms of rest and load management?
71 days from the time they won the championship to the time they tip off tomorrow night, and that is the shortest turnaround ever. And you're talking about a guy who's going into his 18th season and is about to turn 36. But LeBron is not like anybody else we've ever seen in their mid-30s, and certainly not superstars. The guy just doesn't show any sign of slowing down. I think we should expect more of the same. I think he's back in the MVP discussion himself again. But I also think that the Lakers need to be cautious. You know, they know what they're capable of. They don't need to be gunning for the number one seed. They don't need to worry about home court, especially if there's not going to be, who knows if there's going to be fans back in arenas by the playoffs or not. And if they're not, you know, who cares about home court? Manage LeBron's minutes. Make sure that you do not burn him out or put him at risk in the early weeks of the season after that short turnaround, because as great as Anthony Davis is, that team still rises and falls, and their ultimate potential is decided by LeBron.
Howard Beck is joining us. Howard, one last topic before you go. Earlier this month, you did write a guest piece for the New York Times that was about the Golden State dynasty, but really, it was about your father, Cy. And when you're in the business, you don't root, but you're from the San Jose area. So when the Warriors were in the finals, you were able to head back to the Bay Area. What were those trips like?
Yeah, no, thanks, Jim. And thank you again to the New York Times, my old employer, for allowing me to have the guest piece there. 5 straight years, the Warriors got me home. My parents were still living up outside of Sacramento, and so when the Warriors are in the finals, that means I get free trips to the Bay Area, and I got to go visit them. And I did that for 5 straight years, And the last one of them was in 2019 when the Warriors and Raptors were playing. And it was literally the last time I got to see my father. He passed away about 6 weeks later after an accident at home and some time in the hospital. And I didn't get back to see him again. And so the piece was about, you know, the fact that the NBA, it can put us on the road and the job can take you all over the place and away from home. But it also, it gives you those connections too, and it gives you those moments. And because the Warriors were in the finals for five straight years, the Warriors gave me those extra days with my parents, and especially, you know, in this case with my father, at a time that, you know, I didn't know it was going to be the last time I'd see him. But as it turns out, that's what happened. And so I just kind of an appreciation for sometimes the basketball gods looking out for you. And, you know, the Warriors were so fantastic in so many ways to watch them. And just as a basketball fan, they're fun. They were an incredible team. And yeah, selfishly, I was more than happy to see them keep getting to the finals so I could get those visits in.
I think that's awesome. I appreciate you sharing that. I want to ask you one more thing, Howard, because I'm curious about your father and how he approached it. Like, my father also passed away, and he was ill, and he had no problem sharing his thoughts with me about my program. Although I used to say to him, you know, really, because I'm not only can I not share my thoughts with you about your business, you fired me from your business. So I used to get a kick out of my dad trying to produce the show. Your father was a huge fan of newspapers. He loved reading. What did it mean to him that you got to work for the New York Times? And then what kind of feedback did he give you?
So my dad grew up in the Bronx. Both of my parents did. They moved to California before I was born. And so when I was a kid, my dad always had the San Jose Mercury News and the Wall Street Journal on the table, which meant that I grew up a newspaper guy, newspaper reader myself. So that's a really important part of, obviously, who I became as an adult and my career. And so my dad was a huge part of that. But as a proud New Yorker, as a proud guy from Pelham Parkway in the Bronx, my dad would talk about, we had 10 daily newspapers and he read them all. But the best and was better than the San Jose Mercury News, is better than anything I got to read. He would always tell us how great the New York Times was. And this is pre-internet, of course, so I don't know of the New York Times except by its reputation. But my dad loved the Times, and when I got the job there in 2004, and it meant moving 3,000 miles, obviously, being further from my parents, but they were thrilled. My dad was thrilled because he absolutely loved that paper. He had toured the old newsroom, the old building, when he was, you know, in high school, like 50 years before. And so it was a really nice kind of full circle thing where I ended up moving to New York, where my parents were from, and going to work for the New York Times, a paper that my dad had really treasured for all those years. And he was very proud. Even he would send me these notes, these emails, sometimes like, you know, 2 a.m. my time, because he had just read my story online, my latest like Knicks game story or story from the finals. And just send me these quick little notes just saying how much he loved the Turner phrase or something. And my dad was not the most expressive person all the time in person, but his pride always showed through in those emails and these quick little notes he would send me, which thanks to the beauty of the internet, Jim, and thanks to AOL, these things are never deleted. I've still got all of them.
I love it, AOL. Again, really quickly, I think that's great, Howard. I think like younger listeners right now would not understand this, but those who are of like my age or your age would. I mean, this is how I came up. I got into sports because my father taught me how to read the sports page when I was in first grade. I can remember trying to get up in the morning before him so I could go get the newspaper so I could get to the sports page, because inevitably he would come to the breakfast table and say, give me the sports page. But this is how we came up. For those who have never actually read a newspaper, man, the sports pages back in the day were like the most awesome thing, and that's how I first got into it myself. He's a senior NBA writer at SI, SiriusXM NBA analyst, co-host of the crossover NBA show with Chris Mannix and Howard Beck, the pride of UC Davis and a good friend of the program. Wow, that's a lot to cover. Howard, great job. Good on you. Thanks for sharing your thoughts on your dad. That was awesome and really good to get caught up with you.
Appreciate it, Romy. Always a pleasure, man. Great talking to you. Happy holidays. Have a great new year, and can't wait to talk to you again soon.
You too, my brother. Happy holidays. Great job, Howard Beck. A really neat story about him and his dad. And that is true about me and my dad. He taught me how to read like the aggregate section and the standings and everything else. And that was a beautiful thing.